Okay, today's daf is Makos Daf Gimel. We left off on Makos Daf Beis Amud Beis. We said yesterday we didn't quite get to the two dots, or a few lines before that. So the Braisa had said that there are four things that are unique about Edim Zamamin. And we had gone through what those four things were. The Braisa said that, number one, Edim Zamamin can never become a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, even if they're made about another Kohen, that he is a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. Number two, we said Edim Zamamin can never go to an Ir Miklat, even if they're made about somebody else, that he's chayiv to go to an Ir Miklat because he killed somebody b'shogeg. Number three, we said Edim Zamamin never pay kofar, and that's the last of the three that we discussed yesterday. And then number four, which we're going to discuss today, we said Edim Zamamin cannot be sold as an Eved Ivri, no matter what they're made about somebody else. Normally the halacha is, if a person steals money and they don't have money to pay back, so they get sold as an Eved Ivri in order to be able to pay back the money, right? So they get paid, they get bought, and that money goes to pay back what they owe. So Edim Zamamin, even if they're made about somebody else that he stole money, they themselves are never going to get sold as an Eved Ivri. The Rishonim ask why all four items aren't mentioned in the Mishnah. The first two are mentioned in the Mishnah. The last two are not mentioned in the Mishnah. So the Ramban explains that the Mishnah only quotes those things that you're Chayiv Malkus for because we can't do Kasher Zamam to you. The Bryce is listening everything that we're not Mekayim Kasher Zamam on, even if we're not going to give Malkus instead. Now the Rambam in Hilchos Eidos, Perek Chav, Halacha Ches, paskins that you are Malkus, you are Loka, you do get Malkus on Kofar. So according to the Rambam, it's difficult to explain why the idea of Kofar, the fact, Edim Zomim don't pay Kofar, that's not Kasher Zomim, but they do get Malkus. So the Rambam obviously doesn't hold the Ramban's answer as to why it's not mentioned in the Mishnah. Okay, so that's an interesting discussion in the Achronim. Fine, but we were up to discussing the idea of Edim Zamamin not being sold as an Eved Ivri. So we are holding right now. Where are we? We're holding right now. Ve'einim karn be'eved ivri. It is about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 lines from the bottom of the page. Ve'einim karn be'eved ivri. Says the Gemara, ve'einim karn be'eved ivri. Savar Rav Hamnuna le'meimar. So Rav Hamnuna thought to say, Hani mili hecha de'isflei le'didei. We're assuming the case is that the guy that they testified about had money. So had their testimony been accepted, that guy would have just paid the money. He never would have been sold as an eved ivri anyway. So demigo de'ihu lo nizdavin, in hunami lo mizdavnu. Since they never really wanted him to get sold, and their testimony never would have gotten him sold as an Eved Ivri, so they themselves aren't going to be sold as an Eved Ivri. Aval hecha delesli l'didei, but where the guy that they testify about didn't have any money, and therefore had their edus been accepted, he would have been sold as an Eved Ivri, this fellow they're testifying about. Aval gav v'islehu l'didhu, even though the edim themselves do have money, mizdavnu, they're going to get sold. It's a unique case. They're going to be sold as an Eved Ivri, even though they themselves have money, and they could have just, and they could afford to pay the money, but that's not what they were trying to do to the other guy. They weren't trying to get the other guy to pay money. They knew the other guy didn't have anything, and what they were trying to get him was sold. So in that case, they would get sold. So frankly, Gemara v'leimule, but why can't the Edom respond and say, "I ant havalach mi havam mizdavnit"? Look, if you had money, would you have ever been sold? So nanami lo mizdavninan. Just like if you had money, you, the fellow we're testifying about, if you had money, you never would have been sold, even if our Edus would have been accepted. So we have money, so we shouldn't be sold. I, Lemaisa, you don't have money, but they could tie that. If we would have been in your shoes receiving the same edus against us, then we would not have been sold, and therefore you can't sell us now. So the svara is a little bit difficult, because isn't Kasher Zamam whatever they tried to do to the other guy? So what do you mean, theoretically? If you would have had money and our edus would have been accepted, you would not have been sold. But I mean, you would not have been sold. Yeah, but the guy didn't have money, so he would have been sold. So how can you say theoretical? If he would have been you and he would have had money, he didn't have money in the end of the day. So the pshat seems to be that they can taina that we never meant to get you sold as an eved ivri because we didn't know your financial situation. Meaning, since there's a possibility that if you had money, as far as we knew, we didn't know whether you had money or didn't have money. So since there's a possibility, there was a possibility in our minds that you had money, as far as we knew, all we were being mechayev you was mamon. We weren't being mechayev you to be sold as an eved ivri. Now, you're right. Practically, we actually were being mechayev you, but that's not, we didn't realize that. So that's not kashazam nasach. Kashazam means what they plotted to do to him. They couldn't have plotted if they didn't know. So that's the taina that they would say, and that's why they're not sold even in that case. Ella, rather, the way to say it is as follows. If there's ever a case that Edom Zomim are going to be sold, it would be the following. Savra v'mnun l'meimer hani mili hecha di islei ola didei Olid to that Rav Hanuna thought to say that when do we say Edom Zomim cannot be sold? That's only if somebody has money. Either the guy they're testifying against has money, or they themselves have money. But if neither have money, neither the guy himself that they're testifying about nor the Edom have money, then Mizdavni, then they would be sold. Samlei Rava, that's why Rava comes along and says, no. V'nimkar b'gneva so, amar achmana, b'gneva so v'lo b'zamimo. Pasuk says a person is sold for stealing, but you're not sold for anything short of stealing. So even if you go ahead and you testify against somebody falsely that he stole, that's bizmamo. That's not b'gneva so. A person doesn't get sold for anything but g'neva so. So that's exactly the chiddush of the Braisa. Just what's interesting is that the Rambam writes in Hilchos Eidos Perek Chaf Halacha Ches, he quotes this exact din of an aid of Edom Zomim not being sold as an eved ivri, but he talks about a completely different case. He's talking about where they're meyed that somebody stole, but they were meyed that somebody was sold as an eved ivri. Meaning they're made against a random Jew, and they say, what's that Jew doing free? He was already sold as an eved ivri. He should have a din of an eved ivri. And the guy denies it, says, I don't know what you're talking about. I was never sold as an eved ivri. So the Rambam says, oh, so you might think the Edom Zomim, since clearly they were trying to put the other fellow in the status of being an eved ivri, so that they too should be sold as an eved ivri. So the Rambam says, no, you're not sold as an eved ivri. So all the Achronim ask on the Rambam, where did the Rambam get that case from? That's clearly not the case of the Gemara. The whole back and forth of the Gemara, where the Gemara says, well, who has money, who doesn't have money? Did this guy have money? Did that guy have implies that the case wasn't that they were made that he's being sold as an eved ivri, that he was sold as an eved ivri, they were made that he stole money. And therefore, if he doesn't have any money to pay it back, mainly he would have had to have been sold as an eved ivri, but not that he was already sold as an eved ivri. So the Rambam, it sounds like the Rambam just had a totally different gears than the Gemara, that he missed, he didn't have all these lines of the Gemara, which is very difficult to say without any proof. So the Menachas Chinuch in Mitzvah Membei says, Enochinami, the Rambam knows that throughout the whole Shakla Vitari of the Gemara, the case is clearly not where they were made against him that he was sold as an eved ivri. The case is obviously where they were made that he stole. And the issue was who has money, who doesn't have money. But that's in the Havamin of the Gemara, where the Gemara is working with Svaras, with logic. But at the end of the Gemara says, you know what? It's a Gzeres HaKasuv. V'nimkar b'gnevaso v'lo b'zmamam. And once it's a Gzeres HaKasuv, what's the Gzeres HaKasuv telling me? It's telling me that the only way a person is ever sold as an eved ivri is if he himself stole and didn't have money to pay back. La'afuket, coming to exclude every other possible case. Meaning, coming to exclude a case where I testify about somebody else that they stole, so I don't get sold as an eved ivri even if I'm lying. And also coming to exclude a case where I testify about somebody else that he was sold as an eved ivri. So I don't get sold as an eved ivri in his place. That's the Gzeres HaKasuv. The Gzeres HaKasuv is all-inclusive. So in a chinami, it's not the case the Gemara was talking about the entire time, but l'maskana, it's included in the Gzeres HaKasuv. That's how the Menachas Chinuch explains that line of the Rambam. Says the Gemara Vayter, three lines from the bottom, Shum Rabbi Akiva Amar. Rabbi Akiva added a fifth unique element about an Eid Zomim, and that was, Rabbi Akiva said an Eid Zomim, if he admits to being an Eid Zomim, he's not going to be Mishalim al Piatzmo. He won't have to pay based on his own admission. If you look at Rashi about five lines before the lines get wide, Rashi explains, Im Huzbu Bebezdin, if a guy becomes an Eid Zomim, two guys become Eidim Zomim in Bezdin. Velo Hispik Baldin Lahamidan Bedin al Hazamasan, and the person who they had testified against did not yet have a chance to sue them for being Eidim Zomim. Ad shabarchu bo bebezin acher, to the point where they go and they run away and they go to a different Beis Din, meaning before they've been sued for being Edom Zomim, they run to a separate Beis Din, vahodu shuhuzmu bebezin Din ploni, and they go to a different Beis Din and they say, by the way, we have a confession to make. Beis Din says, what's that? They say, well, we became Edom Zomim in the Beis Din across town. So then they're not going to have to pay for being Edom Zomim, because we're going to see why in the Gemara, but then they're not going to have to pay. So it says Gemara, my time in Rabbi Akiva, what's the logic for that? They're Edom Zomim, they should have to pay for being Edom Zomim. Why should they get off the hook just because they were modah, just because they admitted? What, for, it's like a parent, oh, if you admitted you did something wrong, so I'm not going to punish you because I'm so proud of you that you admitted? We have such a system with court? Doesn't make any sense. So says Marno, Kasavar Knasahu. Rabbi Akiva holds the idea of Edom Zomim is a Knas. And we have a rule, Knas Ein Mishalim El Piatzmo, that you never pay a Knas based on your own admission. A person never has to pay a Knas based on his own admission. A Knas is something that is you're only obligated to pay because Beis Din is Mechayiv you to pay. If Beis Din was never Mechayiv you to pay a Knas, then there is no Chiyiv Knas. It's not something that a person would ever have to pay based on his own admission, and we assume that whatever you pay for being an Eid Zomim is always a din knas. Amar Rabba, Rabba says, Teda, I'll prove to you that it's a knas. What's the definition of a knas? So Rashi in Maseches Bava Kama Daf Hei explains the definition of a knas is any payment that doesn't directly correspond to the crime that was done, to the loss that was caused. For instance, if I punch somebody in the face and I pay him for the medical bills and everything, that's not a knas, because there's a reason why I'm paying that amount of money, because I'm paying back for exactly what I did to him, what I damaged him. If I walk my dog and I don't clean up after my dog and the city gives me a $150 ticket, that's a knas. It doesn't cost anybody $150 to clean up after my dog. A speeding ticket is a knas, right? It doesn't cost them however much money for the speeding ticket. It doesn't cost them that amount of money. It's just a penalty. So that's the definition of a knas. Anything that doesn't directly correlate to the damage done. So how do we know that the payment of Edom Zomim is a knas? Teda will simply prove it. Shari lo asu maisa v'neragim v'umishalmin. Edom Zomim are only punished if they were unsuccessful in their attempt to cause the other guy a loss. So if Edom testify that Reuven killed Shimon, they're only going to be killed if Reuven, in fact, was not killed. If Reuven was killed, then they don't become Edom Zomim. Kasha Zomim v'lo kasha rasa. So you see that it's got to be a knas, because they didn't do anything. In the end of the day, they were completely unsuccessful. It's the Maritz Chayis points out over here, in the back of the Gemara, the Maritz Chayis points out that he says that even though there is a Shitas HaRambam, the Rambam in the 18th parak of Hilchos Eidos and Tosfos Mekabed of Dalid say that even if when it comes to money, when it comes to a monetary payment, even if they did cause the guy to pay already, they're still punished as Edom Zomim. So you would say, so maybe it's not a knas. Because when it comes to money, if two Edom testify that Reuven owed Shimon $100, and Reuven actually paid Shimon $100, based on their testimony, they're still going to be Edom Zomim. There's no rule of kasha zomim lo kasha rasa when it comes to money. So you would say, maybe it's not a knas. So says the Maritz Chayis, no, it's still for sure a knas, because mikol makom kuliyam lamodu da'afim lo asu maisenami yeshon b'din azama. Meaning, everyone would agree that if Reuven never paid Shimon the $100 and was never chayv to pay Shimon the $100 based on the Reidus, that they still can become Edom Zomim. So just because they can become Edom Zomim even if Reuven had paid the $100 doesn't mean that it's not a knas, because even when Reuven didn't pay the $100, they can still become Edom Zomim. So therefore, it's very clearly still a knas. And that's why they're Ein Mishalman Al Piatzman. It's also interesting that Rashi that described why Ein Mishalman Al Piatzman, I always assumed Edom Zomim worked differently than that. I always assume that if two Edom come to court and say, Reuven owed Shimon $100, and then two other Edom came and said, Emanuel, you said, no, you're a bunch of Edom Zomim. So I always assumed right away, Beis Din turns to the first two Edom and says, you're chayiv to pay. End of story. Rashi makes it sound like, no, now Reuven has to go and sue them and say, look, we're suing you for being Edom Zomim against us, and then Beis Din is only going to be Mechayev them. It doesn't happen automatically. It's only once they're sued in Beis Din that it's going to happen, which is a tremendous chiddush. I never would have assumed that way. But that's clearly the mashmos of Rashi, right? Because Rashi said, Huzman Beis Din Vol Hispik Bal Din Lahamidon Bedin Al Hazamasan. If the Baal Din didn't have a chance to call them on their azama and to sue them for their azama. So it sounds like it's not at all automatic that you actually have to go through a whole new court proceeding in order to be mechayev them as Edom Zomim. Okay, Amar of Nachman, back in the Gemara, bottom line, Amar of Nachman Teda, Shari Mamun Biyad Bailam Umashalman. I'll prove to you that Edom Zomim, the concept of Edom Zomim is a knas, because the Bailim, the owner of the money, still has the money. Ruvay never had to pay a single cent. And still, Edom Zomim have to pay for it, even though they didn't cause any loss. So, Mainiyu Deloa Sumaisa. So what does it mean when we say what do we mean when we say that Mammon was biyad bailim? So what it means is to law sumaisa, that nothing happened based on what the Edim said. So it says Gemara Hainu de Rabba. Well, that's exactly the same explanation as Rabba. Meaning, think about the progression of our Gemara. Our Gemara said, how do you know Edim Zomim is a Knas? We have two answers. Rabba says because law sumaisa. They didn't do anything. They didn't actually cause anyone to loss, because kasha zom lo kasha rasa. Rav Nachman says, because the guy is still holding on to his money, he never had to pay. Well, that's the same exact answer. The bottom line is, they're both saying that because the Edom Zomim and nothing happened, when they said Ruvay owed Shimon $100, Ruvay never actually paid Shimon $100, and they're still chayiv, so they're both saying the same answer. That's why Edom Zomim is a knas. So Ema v'cheinam Rav Nachman. So the Gemara says, yeah, you're right. They're both saying the same answer. And that's why you should add in the word v'chein. That it's not Rav Nachman saying the new answer. It's v'cheinam Rav Nachman. Yeah, Rav Nachman also says that answer. Period. Amri v'dam Rav. Eid Zomim Mishalim Lefi Chalko. And Eid Zomim pays his portion. So my Mishalim Lefi Chalko. What does it mean he pays his portion? The Gemara is going to have, between here and the Mishnah, five possibilities. We're only going to accept the fifth one. But five possibilities are what it means that an Eid Zomim pays his portion. Possibility number one. Ile medahay mishalim palga vay mishalim palga. If you're going to say, well, if Levi and Yehuda come and say that Reuven owed Shimon $100, so Levi's going to pay $50, and Yehuda's going to pay $50 when they become Edom Zomim. Each one pays his chelek. Each one pays for his portion. So Tanina, we already learned that. Mishalshim b'mamon ven mishalshim b'malkus. We already learned that whenever it's a monetary payment, the Edom amongst themselves split the monetary payment when they become Edom Zomim. If it were Malkus, they wouldn't split the Malkus, right? If Levi and Yehuda were made that Reuven was Chayv Malkus, Shimon Levi and Yehuda were made all together that Reuven was Chayv Malkus, you wouldn't say Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda each get 13 out of the 39. No, we're not Mishals from the Malkus. We don't split up the Malkus. But by money, we do. So that wouldn't be a chiddush to tell me that each one pays Lefi Chalko. That's Pashut. Ella, possibility number two, Kagon de Itzum Chad Minayu, de Mishalim Palga Didei. It must be that one of the Edom became an Eid Zomim, not the other one. That Levi and Yehuda testified in court, Reuven owed Shimon $100. Then Edom came and said to Levi, you were with us, but not to Yehuda. So only Levi became an Eid Zomim. So maybe that's what it's telling us, that since only Levi became an Eid Zomim, he pays his half of being an Eid Zomim, his $50. Yehuda's not going to have to pay his $50. So Frekta Gemara, Umi Mishalim, but is that true? If only one of them became an Eid Zomim, he has to pay. V'atanya, Ein Eid Zomim Mishalim Mamon, Achi Yezumu Shneihem. Edom Zomim don't have to pay anything until both of them become Edom Zomim. The whole group has to become Edom Zomim. It's not enough that one of them was an Eid Zomim. So says Gemara, third possibility. Amar Rava Ba'omer Edus Sheker He Adati, that the guy said, he admitted that he testified falsely. So, meaning that's the case where he pays his chelek, that he's Mishalim Lefi Chalko, not an Eid Zomim at all. That it's a case, it's not really referring to a case of an Eid Zomim. It's referring to Levi and Yehuda testified that someone owed, that Reuven owed Shimon $100, and then Levi comes to court and says, you know what, I lied. I lied about it. So he admits that he testified falsely. So that's where he's going to have to pay his chelek. Yehuda never admitted that he testified falsely. Levi admitted that he testified falsely. So he's going to have to pay his chelek. Well, that has nothing to do with Edom Zomim, though, right? It's not really about Eid Zomim. If you're going to say this pshat, you have to say the expression that we used, Eid Zomim Mishalim Lefi Chalko, is Lavdafka. That Eid Zomim sometimes means specifically the case of Edom Zomim, where two people come and say, Imanu Hayisim, you were with us. How could you know? Right? And sometimes Eid Zomim is used just as an expression. It means a really bad aid. So this would be the expression, just a really bad aid. It doesn't mean that he's really an Eid Zomim. So frankly, Mar, but that's no good. Kol Kamine, is he really believed to say that he testified falsely, to come later on and say he testified falsely? We have a rule that once you've already said testimony, you can't retract the testimony. So he wouldn't even be believed to come back later and say that he testified falsely if he's already said his testimony. Now, why is it that kivan shehigid shuveinu chozer magid, that there is such a rule that once you say testimony, you're not allowed to say testimony again? So Rashi Maseches Ksubos explains, because Edom can't take back the testimony, because by the parsha of a korban that you have to bring for shvuas ha'edus, it says im lo yagid. The pasuk says im lo yagid, which implies that there's only one haggadah, that you have one chance to say your testimony, and that's it. If you didn't say it right the first time, too late. You can't backtrack and change your testimony at a later time. Two explanations of why that should be the case. Either because the pasuk says im lo yagid, that implies that if he says he's eino yodea lagid, that he doesn't know testimony, then he's unable to further testify. Im lo yagid means a guy says, I'm sorry, I don't know any testimony, I can't help you out. So that if it turns out that he lied about that, he's going to be chayav a karban. Why is he chayav a karban? Maybe he's still going to come back and change his mind and say, oh, that testimony, I do remember, yeah, sure. And he's going to tell us the testimony. How do we know? How can we be chayav a karban? Maybe he's going to change his mind. So the very nature of the din implies that he doesn't have the ability to change his mind, that we don't accept him to come back to court later and change his mind, right? And also, right, so that's the very nature of the din of the chayav karban. The Ritva asks that, let's say they swore outside of Beis Din. Actually, let's leave out the Ritva's kasha. The Ritva says that the makar of this din of kivin shehigu shuveinu chozer magid is based on the very din that al pishnei edim yakum davar, that you need two edim in order to believe a person. If you could always be chozer from your edus, so it's as if you were never koveya anything with your when you came as two edim, because who knows if this is just a temporary edus? Maybe he's just going to change his mind. How could we ever pass in a din if a guy can always come into court and undo everything he said? So he says it's misvara that edim cannot kivin shegid shuveinu chozer magid. Beis Yosef writes that if you're chozer magid, then you're making yourself into a rasha, because if you change your testimony, what are you saying? I lied the first time. So it's based on the din of Ein Adam Mesim Asma Rasha, that a person's not allowed to make himself a Rasha, a person's not believed to make himself a Rasha. That's why he's not allowed to change his testimony. So bottom line is over here, the third possibility of what we mean when we say that an Eid Zomim is Meshalim Lefi Chelko is the aid who's not an Eid Zomim at all, but an aid who admits that he lied. That's impossible, because an aid is not believed to admit that he lied. There's a long bach over here, very fascinating bach. We don't have time for it, but whatever it discusses. Rashi and Tosfos have two totally different ways of understanding that line of the Gemara, but we'll just say it the way we said it. Ella, so says the Gemara, possibility number four. Ba'omer hi adnu v'zamnu bebezim ploni. Now, you know where the case is, what the case is when we say that an Eid Zomim pays according to his chelek, his portion? It's talking about a case where Edom came and they said that we were made and became Edom Zomim in another Beis Din, right? And that's where each one is going to have to pay their portion. Says the Gemara, command alok Rabbi Akiva. But that's against Rabbi Akiva, because that's their own admission that they're Edom Zomim. Dik Rabbi Akiva Amar, afinu mishalim al piatzmo. Rabbi Akiva said that Edom Zomim, one of the unique things about Edom Zomim, is that they never have to pay based on their own admission of being Edom Zomim. So therefore, it doesn't fit. It's not that according to Rabbi Akiva, that can't be what it means. And we want it to fit according to Rabbi Akiva. So Ella, the final possibility, and this is the one we're going to accept. What does it mean when we say in Eid Zomim pays l'fi chelko? Ba'omer hi adnu v'uzamnu bebezin ploni v'chiyavnu mamon. They say that we testified and became Edom Zomim in another Beis Din, and we were chayiv mamon, meaning, and then the guy sued us. This is where Rashi gets his idea that becoming an Eid Zomim is not automatic that you're chayiv money. The guy has to sue you for being Eidim Zomimin against him, and then you chayiv money. So they're saying, yeah, we were not only Eidim Zomimin, but the guy sued us, and the Beis Din already declared and already paskined that we have to pay the money. And that's a case where now they're going to have to pay, because now it's not a knas anymore. Once Beis Din was mechayiv them, it turns into a regular mamon payment, and now they're going to be chayiv to pay for what they did. The Ar Sameach says, do you really always have to sue when it comes to Eidim Zomim? So Ar Sameach is mechalik. He says there's a difference between when you're an Eid Zomim on money and an Eid Zomim on Malkus, because the Din Kasha Zomim B'Mamon is a chiyuv that you have towards somebody else, that you were made against somebody, so it's a chiyuv you have toward him. So if he wants you to pay that, then he's going to have to sue you. But let's say I was made that Ruvain is chayv Malkus, and I lied that I was an Eid Zomim. So now I'm going to get Malkus. Does that make Ruvain any happier that I get Malkus? It may make him happier. Does it benefit him in any way? It doesn't really benefit Ruvain. If I have to pay Ruvain money, so that benefits him. So that's clearly between me and him. But if I get killed because I was made that Ruvain is chayv Misa, so it doesn't benefit Ruvain in any way. So, or if I get Malkus because I was made that Ruvain is chayv Malkus, doesn't benefit Ruvain in any way. So the Ar Sameach says that is not between me and Ruvain. That's between me and the Beis Din, me and the Ribono Shel Olam, and therefore in that case you wouldn't have to get sued. This whole chiddush that the guy, the victim of the Eidim Zomimin, has to sue the Eidim Zomimin in order to get his payment, that's only when it comes to money. It's not true when it comes to other types of cases. That's the chiddush of the Ar Sameach, very logical. So I might have thought that when they say that we were Eidim Zomimin in another Beis Din, that since they would not be able to be mechayev their friend in that way, so he also can't be mechayev, meaning that since he can't be mechayev his friend, if one of the Eidim comes and says, we became Eidim Zomim in another Beis Din, so he can't be mechayev the other Eid based on that admission. So I might think he can't be mechayev himself either. Kamash Mulan, that yes he can. He can be mechayev himself at least to pay his portion. Period. Okay, new Mishnah. Let's say two guys come to Beis Din and they say, we're made that this guy divorced his wife, that Ruvain divorced his wife, and he never paid her ksuba. What's Ruvain saying? So when you read the Mishnah, first you think, oh, Ruvain must be saying he did pay the ksuba. No, Ruvain's saying, divorce? God forbid, I never divorced my wife, I'm still married, right? Now the woman is saying, yes, we are divorced, please pay up, right? So you have Edom saying that Ruvain divorced his wife. There's obviously no get. If his wife has a get, it's an open and shut case, then obviously they're believed that she is divorced, right? So and Ruvain says, I don't know what you're talking about. I never divorced my wife. So v'halo bein ayom bein l'machar sofal litin l'ksubasa. Now, eventually Ruvain's going to have to pay the ksuba anyway, probably. Either when he dies, his estate's going to have to pay the ksuba, or if they ever do get divorced, and it doesn't seem that this marriage is going so well based on the case, right? So if they ever do get divorced, he's going to have to pay the ksuba anyway. It's just that they're trying to make him pay the ksuba right now, because they're trying to say that he's already divorced. So that's a question. How much is that worth? How much are they really costing Ruvain? Because they're saying, let's say ksuba is $20,000. They're saying Ruvain's chayv to pay the $20,000 now. In all likelihood, he'll have to pay the $20,000, I don't know, 10 years from now, 20 years, lachar me'ev esrim, at some point. So it's not that he's not going to have to pay it at all. So what are they really costing him? So Omdin, we evaluate kama adam rotz litim b'ksubasa shel zu shem nisalman onesgarsha v'mesa yirushen abayla. We try to figure out how much would a guy pay the woman for her ksuba, that if she, knowing the risks, knowing that if she becomes an almana or if she gets divorced, then they'll get the ksuba. But if she dies first, the ksuba payment will never be made and the husband will just yarshin her. So that's an investment. That's a risky investment when you buy a ksuba from a woman. If a woman is desperate for cash, she can sell a $20,000 ksuba. She could probably get $10,000 for it, right? Because someone's going to say, you know what, it's worth it, just in case, you know, it's worth the risk for the payoff, that the husband's going to die first, which usually, you know, the Jewish men die before their wives all the time, so it's worth the payoff. Men have a shorter life expectancy than women do, whatever it is, so it's worth the payoff. That's the investment. So Ketzat Shaman, how exactly do we evaluate this? The next two lines, it looks like such an easy gemara, right? It's two lines till the next Mishnah. These are probably the two hardest hardest lines in the Masechta. So Ketzat Shaman, how do we evaluate what the Ksuba was worth, what they were trying to cost the guy? So says Mar Amar Rav Chista Bebal, we evaluate by the husband's side of things. Rav Nassim Bar Yoshia Omer, Beisha, we evaluate based on the woman's side of things. Rav Papa, Beisha Ubuksubasa. Rav Papa says, no, we evaluate on the woman's side of things and her Ksuba. So what's that all about? So Rashi explains as follows. Each, the man and the woman each have some zchus in a case where there's a ksuba in play, right? They each have some benefit to having the ksuba there. Meaning, from the woman's perspective, if the husband dies or if he divorces her, she's going to be able to collect the entire ksuba. So that's a monetary value that she'll be able to collect the whole thing. From the man's perspective, if she dies while he's alive, he's never going to have to pay the ksuba, and not only that, he's going to yarshin her. He'll get all of her money, right? So each one has some zuchus of money. Now, whose zuchus is better? Who has a stronger position, monetary position, in the ksuba deal? So says Rashi, yafa koch zuchuso mikoch zuchusa. His zuchus is better. His monetary side is better. Why? Because right now she's alive, he's alive, and right now he's enjoying the peros of her karka. Any karka that's designated for the ksuba, he's able to enjoy the peros right, as of right now. There's no waiting game for him. Plus, he's muchzak right now in the money. The $20,000 that he's going to have to pay for the ksuba, who's holding on to that money right now? He's the one holding on to that money right now. So he has the upper hand and in terms of the ksuba. So if you wanted to buy either his zuchus in the ksuba or her zuchus in the ksuba, you'd pay a lot more for his zuchus than you would for her zuchus. So that's the discussion in the Gemara. So Rav Chista says, what did you try to cost the husband by telling him, by saying that he has to pay the ksuba right now? What you tried to cost him is whatever his zuchus in the ksuba is worth, which is what you would normally pay a guy to take his position on the ksuba. So let's say the ksuba is the total value is 20,000. So for the husband's perspective, it's 15,000, right? Rav Nassim Roshia says, no, you don't look at his zuchus. Granted, obviously you try to cost him his zuchus, but the way you measure it is not just by measuring straight up what someone would pay him for his zuchus in the ksuba. The way you measure it is as follows. What would someone pay the woman for her side of the ksuba? What's the total of the ksuba? Subtract what someone would pay the woman from the total, and that's what you try to cost him. Instead of going directly at what someone would pay him, if let's say the total of the ksuba is $20,000, someone would be willing to pay her $4,000 for her for the chance of taking her position in the ksuba. So then you try to cost him $16,000. That's how we do the cheshbon. And Rav Papa says, yeah, we do it like that, but be careful, it's only in the ksuba. We don't take into account any nichsei malug that she might have, even though they're being mafsid the husband, the nichsei malug, also through their edus, because he's not able to eat from the pairs of the nichsei malug anymore either. Right? So you don't take all that other stuff into account. You just take the ksuba itself into account. That's the simplest explanation. That's the first explanation of Rashi. Rashi then has another explanation, but we're going to leave it at that. Says the Mishnah. Okay, we got through those lines. Now everything else is easy. Says the Mishnah. We testify about this guy that he owes somebody $1,000. And that he has 30 days to pay it up. The guy says, no, I don't have to pay it within 30 days. I was given 10 years to pay it. So again, are they trying to cost him $1,000? No, because he's not saying, I don't owe the $1,000 at all. He admits that he owes $1,000. Over here, what's at stake? The time value of money. That's what's at stake. He's saying that I have 10 years to pay those $1,000. They're saying you only have 30 days to pay the $1,000. So how do we evaluate that? So there are very simple financial equations that we have for this nowadays, based on interest rates and everything else. But the Gemara always assumes no interest rates, right? Because it's usher. Ribbis is us. So the Gemara always assumes no interest rates. So Amdim, Kama Adam Rotsa Litein Viyu Biyadav Elav Zuz, Bein Nosin Mikan Ve'adam Yom, Bein Nosin Mikan Ve'adas Roshanim. We just try to figure out what would a person pay to be in that position. If a guy owes $1,000 in 30 days from now, what would he pay to get a 9-year, 11-month extension on that loan, right? So whatever you would pay, that's the value of that, that's what they're trying to cost this guy when these Edim Zomim say that he owes $1,000 within 30 days. Once we're talking about someone who owes money 10 years from now, so the Gemara says, wait a second, don't we have something in the halacha that doesn't allow for a 10-year loan? I mean, if I lend money to you and say that in 10 years from now you have to pay me back, what's definitely going to come between now and 10 years? Shemitah is definitely going to come. Shemitah cancels all loans. So if the deal is meikara, then it's going to be a 10-year loan. Does Shemitah still cancel it? So says Gemara, yeah, Shemitah still cancels the loan. V'yafagav dahash to lokarin ve'lo yigos. So fasil ve'lo yigos. Even though at the time that the Shemitah comes, no one was asking for the money right now, so you can't say, you can't apply about it, don't press him for the money. He wasn't pressing anyway. Without the Torah telling me he can't press him, he couldn't press him anyway because it was a 10-year loan. Still, since at the end of the day, at the end of 10 years, he's going to come and press you for the money, therefore Shemitah cancels out the loan right when Shemitah comes. Masav Rav Kahana, so Rav Kahana says, but wait a second, that's against our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, Omdim kam adam rosa litin viyu el vzuz biyado, bein litin mikan v'adam yom, bein litin mikan v'adas hashanim. Our Mishnah says, we try to figure out how much money a person would pay in order to have a 9-year, 11-month extension on his loan. V'yam rishvius misham taso, kulunami v'yish lumilei. If you say that Shemitah cancels the loan, he's willing to pay everything to have a 9-year, 11-month extension on the loan. Because you know what a 9-year, 11-month extension on the loan does? It makes it that he's never going to have to pay it, because Shemitah will automatically cancel it. So what do you mean, how much would I be willing to pay? On a $1,000 loan, you know how much I'd be willing to pay? $999.99. Right? I'll pay everything except for the last penny. Because by getting that extension, it means I'm never going to have to pay it. So you'd be willing to pay everything for that. The Ritva asks, why would you be willing to pay the whole thing? Don't we paskin that a person can always taina prosbul hayuli va'avad? Let's say a person didn't have a prosbul, he can always claim that he had one. So he can always claim he had a prosbul over here. So maybe it's still a little risky to risk going through Shemitah. Shemitah might cancel the loan, but not if there's a prosbul. But that might be what the Gemara is answering anyway. The Gemara answers, Amrava hachamayaskin b'malva al-mashkon. The cases where you lent money with a mashkon. When you lend money with collateral, then Shemitah never cancels the loan anyway. Or ubemoser shtros of the Beis Din. There's a concept called moser shtros of the Beis Din, where you give the right to collect your chov to Beis Din, and once you do that, Shemitah doesn't cancel the loan. Rashi says moser shtros of the Beis Din, who prusbul shehiskin Hillel. That's a fancy way of saying prusbul. That's the prusbul that Hillel was misakein. Frek Tosos on Rashi, that's not prosbul. Moser Shtros of the Beis Din is not the same exact thing as prosbul. He said, I'll prove to you that it's not the same thing as prosbul. The Mishnah Maseches Shviyah says, you know how you can get Shemitah not to cancel your loan? You can either do Moser Shtros of the Beis Din, or you could do prosbul. So it's listed as two separate things. Prosbul and Moser Shtros of the Beis Din are obviously not the same thing, therefore Tosos says. So that's what the Pnei Yeshua tries to be Miyashev Rashi, and say that Rashi understood that Prosbul and Moser Shtros of the Beis Din are not the same thing. It's just that, what was Hillel thinking? How can Hillel be misakin to Prosbul? The Din d'Oraisa is that Shemitah cancels alone. So Hillel says, yeah, but I'm stronger than the Torah, so I say it doesn't cancel alone. How could Hillel be misakin to Prosbul? Rav Shakti used to always say, the Reform love Rabbi Hillel. Because Rabbi Hillel would just come and change all the dinim in the Torah, whenever they're not convenient. He's the greatest guy ever, right? So, but how's he allowed to do that? So the only mechanism through which he's allowed to do it is all he did was he institutionalized the concept of Moser Shtros of the Beis Din. Moser Shtros of the Beis Din is if a guy himself goes and gives his shtros over to Beis Din, then Shemitah doesn't cancel. That works on a Daraisa level. What Hillel was misakin was that everyone should do that. Was that everyone should be Moser Shtros of the Beis Din. So Prosbul is an institutionalization of the concept of Moser Shtros of the Beis Din. And that's all Rashi meant to say. Fine, the Tanan, like we have in the Mishnah, Maval Mashkon, Moser Shtros of the Beis Din, and Shemitah. We know that if there's a Mashkon involved, or your Moser Shtros of the Beis Din, then Shemitah doesn't cancel the loan. Ikeda Amri, some have the following version of the discussion. Amr Vidomer Shmuel Amavos Chaver Les Shanim Ein Shvius Mesham Taso. Some have the version that if you lend someone money for 10 years, Shemitah does not cancel the loan. V'avagav Dasi L'Dei Lo Yigos, even though eventually he's going to want to press you for the money, Hashemir Lo Krinu Be Lo Yigos. But at the time that Shemitah comes, he can't yet press you for the money anyway, and therefore Shemitah is unable to be effective on that loan. Amr Av Kahana Afana Nami Tanina. So in this version of the discussion, our mission is not a Kasha, our mission is a Raya. right? We say, oh, we have exactly like that in our Mishnah, because our Mishnah says, Omnim kam adam rosa litan viyu elvisuz biyado, bein litan mikan viyad laban yom, bein litan mikan viyad es shanim. How much would a person pay for the 9-year, 11-month extension on his loan? Viyam shriyus misham taso, if Shemitah would cancel the loan, kulunayim vay shlumilei, he'd pay everything. So you see that that's a raya, that Shemitah does not cancel the loan. Amar Rava, hachum ha'eskinu b'malval mashka, mosu shosel bezin. No, no, malval mashka, mosu shosel bezin, ema Shemitah. Rava says, no, it's not a raya from our Mishnah, because our Mishnah might be talking about a unique case where you used a mashkon or your mosu shosel bezin, and that's why Shemitah wasn't canceling the loan anyway. Vam Ravi Domer Shmuel, another statement of Ravi Domer Shmuel. Hom l'chaveru al menash lo tashmiteni shviyus, shviyus mishametas. If you lend somebody money and you say, I'm lending this money al menash that Shemitah should not be effective to cancel this loan, Shemitah is still effective to cancel the loan. You can't make such a tanai. Sounds like the logic for that is that you can't make a tanai against the Torah. I can't make a tanai against the din of the Torah. The din of the Torah is Shemitah does cancel. I can't make a tanai in my loan that Shemitah is not going to cancel. But we know that Shmuel does not hold that way. Because if I sell you something and I tell you that I'm selling you this Hyundai for $200,000, almanas that there shouldn't be any dinim of ona'ah, any dinim of overcharging where you're going to be able to return and get your money back. So yesh lo alav ona'ah. There's still a din of ona'ah. Ushmuel amar, Shmuel says, ain lo alav ona'ah. No, you have a right to make such a tanai. So you see that Shmuel holds you're allowed to make a tanai against the din in the Torah. So how could you say that Shmuel holds by Shemitah you're not allowed to make a tanai? So it marala amravan lidim yifarsh leminei Shmuel almanas she'ain lecha alai ona'ah. Now, if you say, Almanas, that you won't come to me with any claims of Ona'ah, then there is no Ona'ah, meaning you are allowed to make a Tanai against what it says in the Torah. Almanas Shein Bo Ona'ah. But if you phrase it in a more general way, Almanas, that there isn't Ona'ah. Well, I can't determine whether there is a din of Ona'ah or not. Hare Yesh Bo Ona'ah. There is a concept of Ona'ah. I can make a Tanai that you won't be able to come to me with a claim of Ona'ah, but I can't make a Tanai that there shouldn't be any concept of Ona'ah. Sakhanam you'll be by Shemitah as well. Almanash Tushmateni Shvius and Shri's Mashamtaso. If I say Almanas that Shemitah shouldn't cancel, you shouldn't make Shemitah cancel, you shouldn't allow Shemitah to cancel our loan. So it's our loan, it's our personal thing. Yeah, so that we can make it tonight against the Torah. Almanash Lotushmateni Shvius, Shri's Mashamtaso. But if I make it tonight that Shemitah shouldn't work, well, it's not up to me to decide whether Shemitah works. If I say it in such general terms, that Shemitah is still gonna work. Tana. If a person lends money to his friend Stam, I never set a time limit, so I'm not allowed to come ask for the money within 30 days. We thought that was only if they wrote a shtar, because a person wouldn't write a shtar for a loan that's less than 30 days. But we thought for a verbal agreement where I lend you the money, but we didn't write a shtar, I could come and claim it the next day if I want. Amalei Rav, Hachi Amar Chavivi. Then Rav says, no, my uncle Rabbi Chiya said differently. He said, Echra Malva Bishtar, Vechra Malva Alpeh. Whether it's a Milva Bishtar or it's a Milva Alpeh, doesn't make a difference. You have to wait at least 30 days till he asks for your money back. Tani Nami Achi, Malva Skavero Stam, Ein Rashi Tovu Pacht Mishoshim Yom, Echra Milva Bishtar, Vechra Milva Alpeh. We have a Bryce that says so explicitly. Amalei Shmuel Rav Masson, Lo Tesev Akarech, Adam Farshis La Laha Shmaita, Mino Milsa Dom Rabban, Malva Skavero Stam, Ein Rashi Tovu Pacht Milam Yom, Echra Malva Bishtar, Vechra Milva. He says, I want you to explain to me what's the source of this din that you need to wait 30 days till you ask for your money back. Amalei d'chsiv kirva shnasa sheva shnasa shmita mimashim shnemar kirva shnasa sheva ein yodeishi shnasa shmita. Isn't this pasuk being repetitive? It calls it shnasa sheva and then repeats shnasa shmita. Elamata malomer shnasa shmita. What's it telling me? Lomelcha yesh shmita acher shikazu. It's telling me that there's another shmita that's like this. Vezu zua malves chaveru stam. There's another type of case other than shmita itself where you can't ask for your money back. What's that? When you lend somebody money without designating a time to pay back. That you can't ask for the money within 30 days. That's like Shemitah. You're not allowed to ask for the money within 30 days. And 30 days in a year is considered like a whole year, so you're not allowed to ask for the money within 30 days. That's like you have another year where you're not allowed to ask for the money. Okay, we'll stop there. Next statement of Yudom Shmuel will start tomorrow.